The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH, I'm Andy, your host, and today I'm delighted to welcome back an old friend. Before I do, I'm just going to read this little opening that I've typed up, if I can get to the right page, of course. In our first show for a year and three quarters, and the first Limeys show since 2024. So I'm of course referring to my good friend Limeys co-host Malefica Scott. This is going to be Limeys episode 201. Malefica, are you with us? Malefica, are you with us? You're on mute.
I am. Yes, a technical error straight away. How about that? Very professional nowadays. Yes, 201, Andy. Brilliant. It's lovely to be back.
Yeah, I think you did 29 to 185. And then I think Paul might have come back for a one or two. And then I did a load solo and they seemed to be going well. And then, you know, they just weren't. It really was. You really need sort of two people on there, and certainly missed you, and that was really, I guess, why I sort of put the show down and kind of expanded the I'm Talking To You show to take some of the elements that we did in the Limeys show. But today's show title is Take the Atmosphere Challenge, and I want to start off by asking you, it's a bit like Take the Pepsi Challenge, but rather than get you to sample two glasses of cola or cans of cola and pick the one that you prefer, I'm going to ask you to listen to two clips of two songs. They're both sort of cult classics. It's called Take the Atmosphere Challenge. So are you happy to do this to start us off?
Absolutely. Let's roll.
Okay. Well, here's the first one. Okay. And this is, well, I'll just open it and just let you hear the clip. So here we go with the first one. So that was Atmosphere by Joy Division, which is your first part of the Take the Atmosphere Challenge. And here's the second part for you to compare it to, Malefica, and then you can give us your verdict.
I want an atmosphere. I love a party with a happy atmosphere. So let me take you there, and you and I'll be dancing in the cool night air.
So there you go. What did you prefer, Malefica, in the Take the Atmosphere Challenge? Atmosphere by Joy Division from 1981 or Atmosphere by Russ Abbott from 1984?
I have to go with Russ Abbott, mate. I have to. I haven't heard that song since probably 1984.
Well, you'll be delighted, as I'm sure many of our listeners will, that the clips to the full songs of both of them, the YouTube clips, which are both videos as well, so you get the video as well, which you don't get on this show, of the full songs of both, will be available in the post for this show at achshow.com. So that's my contribution to humour for today. But that being said, I found this. I don't know if I touched on it on an I'm Talking To You show, but it was something that was in my mind that I thought, if I do a show with Malefkas again, I've got to bring that up, and fortunately I remembered. But what I have got in front of me is the show post from the last show that we did, episode 185 of The Lime is simply entitled Goodbye Malefkas. I think it went out on September the 15th of 2024. So as I said, that's about a year and three quarters ago, 15 days short of that, 10 days short of that, actually.
Wow.
And I'm going to go through what was in that show post, and you can dive in if there's anything that you want to add. We discussed Malefkas' reasons for leaving scheduled radio and why he never planned to do radio. The Brass Eye YouTube clip we played during the show intro segment, I believe that was the one about the guy, the crime in the UK. I don't know if you remember that. Anyway, it was all those moons ago. An email from the British Voice. I've got no idea what that was. Something we learned in the past week. The flooding in Vietnam you haven't heard about. People who avoided jail in the last week and people who were released early. Our weekly look at the BBC Verify website. I will say I looked at that earlier today and it's even more dire than it was back then. I don't think I've looked at it since back then. But it's set out in such a way where it's just lots of little boxes with... And I just, the whole thing, I mean, I think it's probably designed more for phones than it is for a computer screen. Maybe that's where I'm going wrong. The interesting thing is, and I'm going to mention these, is of course, this became a staple of our show. And it was the vaccine links section under the vaccine links heading at the bottom of the show post. Now, all of these links still work. So the first one is how we have no new figures since December the 1st, 2022. Of the 2,362 deaths and 474,018 people injured after taking the vaccines from the UK government that used to update these, obviously before December the 1st of 2022, but the original link is still there in the post for this show. It takes you to the same page. It just doesn't offer the same data. We got Malefkas' news on The Great Distraction that we'll be getting into in a little while. And the purpose of this segment, so that was something you touched on, I think, before at the last show. Some of this week's Daily Mail articles that didn't end up behind their Mail Plus paywall. I will give you a little update on that. For those that haven't listened to the I'm Talking To You show, I have noticed that there's more and more going behind the paywall. And I've even noticed articles that I've clicked on a few months ago that weren't behind the paywall. I click on now and they are. But that doesn't mean they all are, because I'm going to get to that in a moment. Malefkas' news roundup of the week. How the more everything becomes centralised, the more everything seems not to work. And a book to look out for in Australian schools and many other topics. So now I'm going to go down to the bottom of today's show post. First up, you've got the link that I mentioned about the British government's page, Coronavirus Vaccine Adverse Reactions. And as I said, that claimed an aggregate total that 2,362 people had died and 474,018 people have been injured after taking the vaccine. Doesn't say that the vaccine caused it, just says after, and that's based upon MHRA, the UK's Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency data, which was last released by the British government in the five analysis prints they used to have up there on December the 1st of 2022. And the five analysis prints were the four different vaccines. So you had AstraZeneca, you had Pfizer, yeah, and a couple of others as well. And then you had a third one, Novavax, I think. And then the fourth one was unspecified. So that was when they didn't specify what vaccine they'd given the patient. I think there was another one, because I had to add them all together. I think that was it. There wasn't one that correlated them all, was there? Because I'm thinking maybe the fifth one was that, but I had to add them all together. And then I've got a link below that, which this Daily Mail article disproves what I just said about a lot of ones I've clicked on before that are now behind the paywall. This one isn't. And the description I've got is, click here for the Daily Mail article, Headline exclusive revealed just 75 Brits have been killed by COVID vaccines as experts hail data as proof jabs are incredibly safe and not behind surging excess deaths. As this article cites MHRA data referenced in the British government's page above, we at the Limeys are delighted that 2,287 people in the UK have been brought back from the dead. And we hope on that basis for 174,018 people who reported having been injured after taking the vaccine are healed by this same unknown British entity that can somehow bring over 2,000 people back from the dead. That page is still there. It's not behind a paywall. Below that, click here for proof that the British government expected a high volume of adverse reactions to the COVID-19 vaccine. Scroll down to point 2.1.4 on this European Union website, and the two is like two capitalized together. That's how it's denoted, and it gives you the details there. That page you'll be familiar with, Malifkas, that's still there. Yeah, and then
that
below
was the, that was the tenders electronic daily, wasn't it? That was for the government
EU thing.
Tenders within the European Union for companies to plug their wares, bid for a job.
Yeah, and it actually, as I say, it states an expected high volume of adverse reactions to the vaccine. So you can see that for yourself in there, ladies and gentlemen. And then below that, there's the British government's page on the vaccine damage payment, where it's a page that if you have been injured by a vaccine, then you can claim up to £120,000 in compensation. So these might seem not so relevant now, but I thought I'm going to include them because they were included in our last show together, so why not include them today? Malifkas, any comments on what I mentioned?
Yeah, I think they are very relevant. You'll be you and listeners will be glad to know actually that within the last year, the government have brought out an adverse drug reaction reporting system for veterinary medicine now as well. So you can report if your cat or dog has had adverse drug reactions as well now. That's a new page been set up. I mean, how far we've come. And, isn't it funny? When we were reporting all that stuff back then, I think our Limey show at the time was one of the only shows that consistently reported every week on the updates up until the point, obviously, where the government thought, maybe we won't update this anymore. Mm. We'll just put out a Daily Mail article instead saying how many people we've brought back to life. Great.
It is odd how it worked out. I mean, I think that what it could be in the Daily Mail article, you see, we have to always cover ourselves more and more because they're looking for any excuses to come after anybody for any reason. But they might say that someone's looked at the MHRA data and they've sort of delved into it deeper and they've managed to I mean, they could come out with anything. And if it went to a court of law, you can imagine who would be found guilty and who would be found not guilty. Do you see what I mean? What was that saying? There is truth, lies, and there's statistics, something like that. Basically, data can be manipulated.
I think it's also down to the statement from the great David Irving, which was British justice is the best that money can buy.
Yeah. Certainly seems that way with some of the studies I'm seeing from so-called independent sources that seem to benefit certain groups when they're independent. But they're always very keen to tell us that they're independent. It always like, why do you have to point out that you're independent? It sounds like you're trying to hide an agenda to start with. Do you see what I mean? If I see independent source and then I see what they've proven or disproven, I sort of thought, doesn't that somehow go along with the status quo, what's being pushed by both our government and the media in unison? It's funny how that always seems to happen through these independent sources, doesn't it? But there you go.
I think they're probably paid to be independent, Andy, I expect.
Yeah, and that just proves how independent they are, doesn't it? So I mean, I've got a surprise here for you, Malifkas, because however good or bad our show is today, as far as I'm concerned, from some of the utter dross that I hear masquerading as shows in the independent alternative media today, we can quite easily hold our own. But one thing that I found myself doing more and more is just not listening to alternative media shows. If I'd have listened, if the shows around today were around 25 years ago when I got really interested in this subject, I don't think I'd have ever got interested in it. the sort of greats I used to listen to back then that have gone, and the quality of what we've got today, and the amount of disinfo out there that seems to be completely set up that way.
Yeah.
One thing that you used to say a lot, and it's always whenever I see, and I'm seeing this more and more, Malif, because I've seen stories in the Daily Mail of the Baron Trump, you know, Baron Trump's Marvelous Journey, that book supposedly came out in the late 1800s. There was a whole article on that in the Daily Mail recently. I saw an article about, is Trudeau the son of, real son of Castro? That was in the Daily Mail. And the things that we saw years ago in the so-called alternative independent media seem to be being picked up by the mainstream, provided they don't breach certain things that they can't allow them to breach, if you see what I mean. There's certain things they won't allow you to talk about. And so what they're trying to do, I think, is absorb the things that aren't going to be problematic for them into the mainstream media, and then leave all the stuff out that they don't want people to talk about. And also, at the same time, tell us what is right and left wing. So, for example, there's a biography that's supposed to be coming out about, a book, I'm not sure what it was exactly, but it was reported on, and there were claims that the BBC had said they wouldn't allow Nigel Farage to have a slot on Desert Island Discs because it would upset some of their woke employees. The BBC subsequently came out and said, you know, that's nonsense. We've not said that at all. We're not barring Nigel Farage from coming on. So, but what I got from it is it seems to me the message they're trying to tell you is someone like Nigel Farage is as far to the right as anyone can go. Okay, so there is no beyond him. And then that makes it interesting when you remember those allegations of how the UKIP, which is what he started off with, UK Independence Party, about getting out of Europe, the allegations that was created to take the votes away from the BNP because they were worried that they were getting too strong. And now we're being told that, oh, he's the right wing, where, of course, they were beyond the right, further to the right than he was, if you believe in right and left politics anyway. Back to you.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, going back to what you started saying there, what is I always used to say to, you know, particularly in our final Limey's shows, you know, a year and three quarters ago now, crikey, it's time has flown. But what I always used to say, what is the difference between independent and mainstream media? Well, 6 months and two years, depending on the subject matter. You know, and I think quite often these ideas are leaked, quote, unquote, into the independent media simply to plant the seeds in people's minds so that later when they do report on this stuff in the mainstream, it's not so much of a shock for, you know, because these ideas have been floated around for 6 months, 2 years now. So, you know, it's not so much of a shock to the general public if they do eventually turn out to be true. So, isn't it interesting? It's, you know, it's thinking back to all the stuff that we did cover, and we covered so much stuff over that period of time, and a lot of it has come to fruition. And, you know, anyone out there that did actually archive the shows that we did, you know, go back and have a listen to some of the stuff. I mean, I know that I archived quite a lot of the shows that we did, because one of the things I have done on purpose, because, you know, obviously everyone thinks, you know, when you first get into all this stuff, you're going mad and you lose a lot of friends and that kind of thing. One friend of mine, we'll go into a little bit of that in a while. He's been in contact again recently, and he can't help but come to loggerheads with me over things. One thing I find really interesting is just the fact that we've covered so much of that stuff. And the reason I archived so much is not just so that I can go back and say, look, see, I told you so back at this time or that. No, that's not why I've archived that stuff. The main reason is so that I have literally an audio log of my journey through all this with yourself, with other hosts, with the listening audience, of my learning curves and my trains of thought. And that will be something in years to come when I shake off this mortal coil, that my kids will be able to go back to and have a little listen to Dad, either being completely way off the mark, but most of the time, absolutely bang on. So, I mean, I'm not going to say that we were right about everything, Andy, and I'm not going to say that, you know, we are right about everything, but predominantly you do see, you know, everything has continued in exactly the same vein as we said it would. You know, going on to this Russia-Ukraine war thing, we'd commented on that long time back, still going on now. I notice actually, I was going to have this as part of the great distraction, but Zelensky calls for face-to-face Ukraine war negotiations in letter to Putin. So have the West managed to buy all of Ukraine that they wanted to buy now? Is the war going to be over in a little bit? I don't know. But you can see how this is all, you know, this is just run, you know, its course. And we said it would. You know?
Yeah.
And what's the end result? Is Ukraine has been sold to Russia's supposed enemies. So there you go.
And were the other thing, of course, is, you know, when you look at this huge body count on either side using World War One style warfare, which didn't make any sense at all, unless the idea was to do a big population cull on both sides, which, you know, may or may not have been the case. But again, anything else you'd like to say on that? What I have noticed, Malificus, is I really don't want to dominate this conversation, but because I'm so used to going solo now, I either have Peter on and I just hand the whole show to him and then come up with a couple of questions at the end, or I'm just doing it myself. So do feel free to just interrupt me at any point, please. But anything else you'd like to say on what you just said with Zelensky, Russia, Ukraine, before we move on to the next topic?
Absolutely. Well, one of the things you just brought up is the World War One, World War Two style warfare that is completely unnecessary nowadays. Absolutely. I mean, it was never necessary in the first place, let's be honest. And, you know, as much as I'm in support of all those that went and fought for their country, I'm not in support of the real reasons of why they went. But, you know, one of the things I discovered over the last year, because I've been doing a lot of studies on the Battle of the Somme, because my granddad was commanding a battalion in the Battle of the Somme, lost a lot of good friends and all that kind of thing. But I watched an interview with a British chap, and I'll keep this as brief as possible. And this just goes to show you how both sides are literally, you know, funded. You know, as Grandad said in his book, you know, why banks create money lavishly out of nothing to finance wars, and yet for peace credit is immediately restricted. One of the most interesting statements that I came across from an eyewitness, a guy that was there during the Battle of the Somme, he said, we were all supposed to get out and walk after, you know, because I don't know whether you know, Andy, but the Battle of the Somme started with a massive barrage, and then they let off a big mine that fell short. Actually, it was an underground mine, and it fell short of the German lines, and after it had gone off, the Germans just occupied the crater and held us back. But all the troops were supposed to walk to their destinations, because Jerry wouldn't be able to put up any kind of fight after the barrage we were going to give them. And this chap said, he said, we didn't walk, he said, we ran, he said, because we didn't want to even give them a chance. And he said, and I got to some of the German lines as they were coming out of their bunkers. And he said he took out a few of them, this, that, and the other. And his platoon actually managed to get to one of the German lines. And the Germans, when he says coming out of their bunker, bearing in mind we just had wood and sandbags to make our shelters out of, the Germans on the Somme line had bunkers that were constructed from concrete, which were up to 30 feet deep. And he said one of the things that disturbed him, he said, was, you know, he popped off a few of the opposition, as he put it, and went in to one of these bunkers. And what really upset him was the fact that all these bunkers were carpeted, not with carpet, but with brown paper bags labeled Blue Circle cement. Now, I'm going to put that into perspective for everyone, because not everyone will understand this, but he said, it always disturbed me, that Blue Circle cement thing. And he said, and when the war was over and we got transported past, you know, we were being taken home, but we went past German lines, and I think he said he came back through Rotterdam or somewhere like that, and he said there were all these crates, like pallets, huge pallets on the docksides of Blue Circle cement, all ready to be delivered to Germany. Well, where was Blue Circle cement? That Blue Circle had the world monopoly on cement production during that time, and it's now owned by a French company. But before it was owned by a French company, which is only really in respectively recent of a recent event in the last 100 years. Yes, it was a British company that had world monopoly on cement. Yet the British didn't have any concrete bunkers. It was all the concrete was being shipped over to Germany. And this guy's statement at the end of telling us all this, he said, so someone was making some money out of it. And that's really stuck with me. It just upholds everything that is going on now was going on back then as well. So this going to, just to finish up, as I said, a year and three quarters ago, this Russia-Ukraine war thing is simply a massive transfer of wealth. That's it.
Thank you, Maleficus. Yes, very interesting. And what I'm going to quickly read, and this is something I've covered as well, but I want to put some of the best stuff, if you like, most important material that I find to be most important into this show together that we're doing. And this is from Cass Sunstein, and the name is CASSUNSTEIN. It's his Wikipedia page, and I'm going to read to you from the Conspiracy Theories and Government Infiltration section. Now, I'm doing this as a sort of reference point for what I said about how exciting I used to find these conspiracy shows 25 years ago, and how few of them I listen to today. Sunstein co-authored a 2008 paper with Adrian Vermeule titled Conspiracy Theories, dealing with the risks and possible government responses to conspiracy theories resulting from cascades of faulty information within groups that may ultimately lead to violence. In this article, they wrote, "The existence of both domestic and foreign conspiracy theories, we suggest, is no trivial matter, posing real risk to the government's anti-terrorism policies, whatever the latter may be." They go on to propose that the best response consists in cognitive infiltration of extremist groups, where they suggest, among other tactics, government agents and their allies might enter chat rooms, online social networks, or even real space groups, and attempt to undermine percolating conspiracy theories by raising doubts about their factual premises, casual logic, or implications for political action. They refer several times to groups that promote the view that the US government was responsible or complicit in the September 11th attacks as extremist groups. The authors declare that there are five hypothetical responses a government can take toward conspiracy theories. We can readily imagine a series of possible responses. 1. Government might ban conspiracy theorizing. 2. Government might impose some kind of tax, financial or otherwise, on those who disseminate such theories. 3. Government might itself engage in counter-speech, marshalling arguments to discredit conspiracy theories. 4. Government might formally hire credible private parties to engage in counter-speech. And 5. Government might engage in informal communication with such parties, encouraging them to help. However, the authors advocate that each instrument has a distinctive set of potential effects or costs and benefits, and each will have a place under imaginable conditions. However, our main policy idea is that government should engage in cognitive infiltration of the groups that produce conspiracy theories, which involves a mix of 3, 4, and 5. Now, if you just listen to that again closely, ladies and gentlemen, all sorts of shows that declare themselves independent or alternative come to mind when I'm reading some of this. They really do.
Yeah. And particularly the one near the end. Yes, definitely.
Yeah, and I'm not going to say give any examples, because if I am right, then they've obviously got the financial backing to come after us. So it's something that you should be your own judge on. And any thoughts on that before we move on, Maleficus?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously I took a break from radio when I stopped doing the lines. I took a break from radio, I think, until the sort of February, when I then went and started doing February or March, I think, of the next year. And I started helping co-host Shelley Tasker's show, which I've been doing sort of on and off ever since. I still get sent quite a lot of stuff. I mean, I've still got people in contact with me via email from when I was doing the shows with you, Andy. And some of them I'm really, really thankful for. A big shout out to Ralph, actually, who's opened my eyes on so many different subjects. We'll get into a bit of Galen Windsor in a bit if you want, Andy. but I get sent a lot of stuff from people. And you know, one of the things that really irritates me now is that you've got these folks on YouTube, and they're sat around a table or whatever, and they've got their mics in front of them, and it's all very nice, very ornate looking setting, and everything's shot in 4K now and that kind of thing. And you have these tos and fros with these different hosts and the guests that they have on, and it all looks very clean cut and professional, but it also gives you the impression that it's very independent. Until you realize that, and I'm not mentioning any names here, but if anyone has either sent me these videos or stumbled across them themselves, him, this particular broadcaster, this particular interviewer, he spends his time getting these hard-hitting people in who've got a lot to say on what the likes of yours and my audience, Andy, would say. Yeah, I'm on board with that. Yeah, oh yeah, that's true. Oh, he's hit the nail on the head. Oh, he's quite close to the mark there. He gets, you know, gets all these people that are quite close to the bone, and then shills for Bitcoin partway through his show, every show. And you just think, well, we know which side your bread's buttered, you know. So you do have to be, you have to have such a discerning mind. What was it, the William Casey statement, Andy? We will know our disinformation project is complete when everything the American public believes is a lie. And that's everything. That's not just some things. That's everything you think is true. So the more we progress into this digital age, Andy, the harder it is to actually discern now. Yeah, with the use of AI and all that kind of thing as well. I mean, I'm sure they've been using AI to write the Daily Mail for years because their spelling and their grammar's awful. You know, in fact, maybe not. Maybe AI would even get that right at times. I don't know.
Well, it's funny you said that because you've segued nicely into an article that I got from today's BBC news. Went up 7 hours ago, in fact. It's by James Gallagher. Headline, World First Vaccine Designed by Artificial Intelligence. I'll read you the first four paragraphs because they're only three or two lines each. Artificial intelligence has been used to develop a fundamentally new type of vaccine that could protect against large swathes of viruses and prevent pandemics, say researchers. The team at the University of Cambridge say it is the first time a vaccine's key component has been designed entirely by AI and then trialled in people. The vaccine was engineered to work on all coronaviruses, which would include all COVID variants and viruses that infect animals, but could start the next pandemic. The work is still in the early stages, but the team is already developing separate vaccines that could tackle flu and Ebola. So all these different things that Ebola's been given a good bit of exposure in the mainstream media recently. They had that hantavirus thing, which I even emailed you that X-Files clip, but that proved to be another monkeypox. It was something that exploded quickly, like, you know, this is something that could take hold in a matter of days and we're all locked down, and now nobody remembers what the hantavirus was. Do you know what I mean?
Well, but they're still pushing. Let's touch Ebola on both Ebola and Hanta just for a second, just very quickly. So hantavirus, as I'm sure everyone knows now, it basically you can get from inhaling rodent fecal matter that is in the air. So the very fact that people on that boat were coming down with it shows you what the state of that boat was, and the fact that they kept them locked on the boat, it's no surprise that they ended up with more and more cases, is it? So anyway, there's that one. That was my quick theory on that. And the Ebola thing, what actually really frustrated me the other day is everything in the media is done for effect, isn't it? Everything is done for, you know, achieve, what is it we always say? Achieve an emotional response and nobody needs any evidence. And one of the pictures that actually stood out at me was a picture of two people in hazmat suits, all masked up, this, that, and the other way, you know, with gas masks on or whatever, carrying a coffin that apparently had a baby in it. And you know, obviously, you know, two workers carrying a coffin, and I'm not saying that a baby didn't die, so I don't want to offend anyone or anything like that, but why did they have like handprints of blood all over the outside of this coffin? You know, would that, is this not just for effect, for people to achieve an emotional result? You know, and I'm not saying it definitely was, but it certainly points in that direction, doesn't it? Not only is it a child, but look at the blood across the coffin. You know, surely they didn't need to put blood all over the outside of the coffin. What was that all about? You know?
Yeah, I agree. It's very interesting. And yeah, I've got a couple little bugbears I'm going to bring up now quickly because... Well, we'll go through one at a time. Firstly, I want to talk about receipts. Now, something I've noticed when I go to shops, it's probably been going on for longer than a year, but everywhere I go, I buy something and they say, do you want the receipt? And I'm buying, like, electrical things. Do you want your receipt? Well, okay, if I don't take my receipt and there's something wrong with it, are you going to give me a refund? Do you know what I mean? And it's just amazing to me how this has come about. And one thing that I typed in today, shops asking you if you want a receipt, into Google. And this AI overview came up at the top. It says, it's a universally relatable, slightly mundane retail experience. While cashiers asking if you want a receipt mostly just want to save on thermal paper and speed up the queue, many corporate chains use the prompt as a sneaky opportunity to harvest your personal email address for marketing databases. Now, something I noticed recently that happened to someone I know, they were in a charity shop of all places, and they said, oh, we can send you your receipt electronically. Can we do that? Give us your email address. And suddenly this person's getting all this marketing stuff from that company now.
Yeah.
But the other thing, this takes me on to charity shops as well, and also supermarkets, okay? Because even in McDonald's, you go and order a burger and it says, oh, you go to pay. Oh, do you want to round it up to this amount to give to this charity? And I'm like, what? I'm buying a burger here. And even one thing that I find absolutely egregious and extremely offensive, and I think it's a form of bullying, because it's happened to my girlfriend. She's at the counter in a charity shop buying something. Oh, can we round it up another 50p for charity? And she's like, all right then. Do you know what I mean? And she's already given the money buying something, but it makes people who, you know, don't really want to be, she doesn't want to look mean. Do you see what I mean? So she just ends up paying more to give them more money. And I think that's disgraceful. And what I would say to these people, firstly, if I was in Oxfam, I'd be asking why I want to give extra money to support prostitution, their workers hiring prostitutes in Haiti. Okay. And this goes back, you can look up a BBC article here, Oxfam Haiti allegations, how the scandal unfolded, from the 21st of February 2018. And they even went, it was originally published in The Times, and they put out an advert in The Guardian on Saturday 17th of February of that same year. We are so sorry to Oxfam supporters, friends and volunteers. We are so sorry for the appalling behaviour that happened in our name. More than anything, we are sorry to the people of Haiti and other places where the conduct of Oxfam staff has been reprehensible. The sexual misconduct of former Oxfam employees in Haiti during 2011 and in Chad during 2006 should never have happened. We should have been more explicit in our reporting of these incidents. But what's more, I have to, with something like that, being a Christian, you know, they've admitted they were wrong. They want to move on. I'm not one of these people that feels that they should hang around. But that kind of enters my mind only because I'm being asked to give more money after I'm already supporting them buying something from their shop, and I think that's a disgrace.
Absolutely.
What instead one should do, in my opinion, there's an interesting Wikipedia page. It's called CEO Compensation Among Charities in the United Kingdom. And this gives a list of a lot of charities and the CEO's name and what they earn. And so you have to bear in mind, am I right or wrong, Malificus, in thinking that most people who work in charity shops and therefore are asking for this money, and will you round it up to this, give us a little bit more money, they work for free? Am I right or wrong there?
Not in all cases.
Right.
Some,
okay.
You can volunteer, but some people are employed to be there.
Okay. Well, what I want to say then is here I don't see any in this list. And you can look it up for yourself, as I say. I'll probably put a link to this in the post for the show. Wikipedia page, CEO compensation among charities in the United Kingdom. And all the charities that they list for the CEOs, right, there's not one of them that isn't taking a salary, okay? And my point being is that surely there are some CEOs, because a lot of people you see working in charity shops are retired. So how come there aren't any retired CEOs out there that are becoming a CEO of a charity and doing that for free? Do you see what I mean? And I question, for example, I'll give you some details. And it's a strange list because it says salary data source. So I have to give you, I'm going to give you some of the names of some of the charity shops I go into. So British Heart Foundation, the CEO salary is $180,000, and that was as at 2013. Cancer Research UK, that's another shop I go into. CEO salary is $240,000. That was as of figures from 2015. Oxfam that I mentioned, that's CEO salary $120,936. That's based on figures from 2021. Scope, $129,000. It's a CEO salary based on figures from 2015. And there's a few, and there's a lot more that you can actually look up in this list. So I'll include the link in the post for this show. But again, how come they can't find any CEOs to work for charity? And I just find it so egregious they're asking for money. Sorry I've rambled on, Malif, because please give us your comments.
Absolutely fine. You are one of the things that really frustrates me about charity shops is that they charge, they get all this stuff for free. So you're completely right. Asking for an extra 50p is completely egregious because it's a charity shop. No one takes anything to a charity shop and expects to get paid for it, do they? You dump off all your stuff for free. They have it for free. That's what charity is. And, I'm not going to mention any names down here, but there's one to do with air ambulances and that kind of thing down here. They charities at this point down here in Cornwall are saying, sorry, no, we're not accepting any more donations at the moment. Reason being is that they're charging far too much for all the stuff that they got in there for free. And people don't want to, they will go in and the shop floor is full and they can't fit any more in because they're just charge half the price.
Yeah.
Turnover is always better than profit.
You're right.
You're getting it for free anyway.
Yeah. I funnily enough, Jim Rizzoli even came out with this out of America. He's been to some of these that he used to go to and things were cheap. And now they're just, it's greed, greed, greed everywhere you look. And I mean, I've been in some of these places. And the other thing that they do as well is, you used to find some, I look at DVDs and CDs a lot, but there are certain ones you just never find. And then you'll find them not on eBay, but it's being sold by charities on eBay. And so if they think something's worth more than a couple of quid, maybe it's worth a fiver. A lot of them will just stick it on there for a fiver just to make that extra few quid on the website rather than just, someone might, obviously do you see what I mean? And it certain shops now, I don't even bother looking at the CDs or the DVDs because I know it's going to be all the dross that I wouldn't be interested in. There wouldn't be anything interesting in it. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. But the fact of the matter is to turn donations away is completely against the supposed ethic of a charity shop. If your shop floor is full, put the prices down and keep accepting the stuff. But this shows you that they're trying to maximize profit to keep these potential CEOs in their healthy living lifestyles,
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So, okay, what else have I got here for you? Oh, this is something that I got specially for you, because while I'm not listening to so many shows now, I've been listening to all sorts of... What I did was, I've got a load of documentaries. I will stick the DVD in the computer and I will just record it using the same recorder I'm recording this show on. So I record it in real time. Obviously you have to turn all the open mics off, otherwise you'll get all the noise from whatever you're doing at the time. But you do that, record it, and that's a way of recording director's commentaries. Sometimes even, don't forget folks, things like Fawlty Towers, Blackadder, stuff like that, you could buy that on cassette tape. And the reason is that if you know the episodes, it was quick enough, do you see what I mean, that you could still enjoy an audio version. There wasn't like wasn't like a Sergio Leone film where you've got the start of Once Upon a Time in Once Upon a Time in America, and the first 7 minutes is like a creaking sign outside a shop before Charles Bronson comes along, just goes on and on and on and on and on. But these things are quick, so you can listen that way. And there's a documentary series that was on the BBC in the 1990s called Black Box. In the United States, it was called Survival in the Sky, which again is the name of the Wikipedia page. And it says the series primarily concentrated on commercial aviation accidents and investigations related to them. They were first aired as a series of only four episodes in the late 1996, with two additional episodes produced and aired in 1998. The series was produced with the cooperation of the National Transportation Safety Board, NTSB, that's the American Air Crash Investigation Branch, and the Air Accidents Investigation Branch, the AAIB, which is the UK version, and interviews many of the investigators and survivors of air crashes. Not the nicest of topics, I will admit, but it's certainly a lot more fascinating than a lot of the dross you can hear out there. But the reason I bring it up today is I was listening to something I downloaded from yesterday, a show that was so awful that I just stopped it midway through, and I was looking through my phone, I'll listen to this series again. And I'm already on to episode 4, and they talked about the Comet airliner out the UK, and it's my understanding from this show that back then, I think we're talking 40s, 50s time, the UK was like the leading sort of aircraft producer. Of course, now it's like been Boeing and what have you. But one of these episodes, episode 4, Crash Detectives, focused on the de Havilland Comet decompression incidents. And de Havilland doesn't sound very English to me, but then Christopher, it's the English-Irishman, I suppose, but he's supposed to be Irish, so maybe it's not French after all. But they were talking about these Comet airplanes that Maleficus will probably tell us more about when I shut up. They were big news in the air industry at that time, but they kept crashing. And it turned out what was happening was they had these great big windows in the plane, so you could look out these big windows. That was one of their appeals. But it was actually increasing metal fatigue on the plane. So after only a few thousand hours of flying, they were just dropping out the sky because they literally would just unzip, you know, all the way along the fuselage, like someone pulling the zipper. Anything you'd like to add to that, Billy? Because I put that in there because I know how fascinated you are with planes.
Yeah, no, I didn't know about the de Havilland Comet, and that was the issue. But yeah, obviously putting huge gaps in the airframe is going to weaken the structure. Of course it does. And when you're pressurizing aircraft so that people can actually be comfortable in them at 30,000 feet or whatever, yeah, that's an awful lot of pressure inside that. It's kind of a little bit the reverse of the Titan sub that went down looking for the Titanic and kind of just disappeared in a little squashed mass. The opposite effect. I mean, de Havilland obviously were a huge contributor to the British Air Force during World War II. That would explain it, Andy. The fact they put blooming great holes in the airframe, you would have to shore that up. There's a reason why Barnes Wallace came up with the geodetic frame for the Wellingtons and the other bombers that he designed, simply because it was a framework made up of tiny little triangles, and you could punch holes in it, you know, from cannon fire and anti-aircraft fire, and they'd be fairly robust. But even a geodetic frame has got its limits, you know. So to put big sizable holes in an airframe and expect to be able to pressurize it at 30 something thousand feet, I guess it comes as no surprise. But it obviously did for de Havilland.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to try and keep this to an hour today because we both have things to do. But we've got about 10 minutes left. So, Malificus, is there anything that you've got lined up that we haven't yet talked about?
Well, I mean, there is lots of things that we could cover over. So I'll just give you a quick look at what would have been the great distraction for this episode. So one of the interesting things, an article here from The Guardian, new ways to remove CO2 from the atmosphere must grow much faster, report says. Novel forms of CO2 removal must expand at highly ambitious rates if the world is to limit global heating. It's not called global warming anymore, or global cooling or climate change. It's now global heating, folks. That's the new buzzword, to 1.5 degrees centigrade. So, and they've got pictures here of this huge machine with big pipes on it. And it says a direct air capture fan on the roof of a garbage incinerator outside Zurich. And you look at this and you think, and that's going to filter out all the CO2, is it? So CO2, which is essentially plant food, folks. And I go back to that American senator, or the guy in front of the American senators, stating that, if CO2 drops below 0.03% of the atmosphere, plant life starts dying off in the world. So anyway, the other one was the Zelensky thing. Well, we've kind of covered that. Now there was that we've had a lot of, I'm just going to say, a lot of division being stirred up in the UK at the moment, and the fires are being stoked ridiculously by the mainstream media. We've even got Starmer coming forward now and accusing Elon Musk of trying to whip up division over certain incidents that have occurred recently here in the UK. This divide and conquer, this using people's own goodwill against them, this using emotional responses to achieve this division amongst people is being pushed and pushed and is so rife now. For those of you that are still following it, Hunter Biden fires back at trolls over cocaine found at the White House, saying it's not mine. I would never have forgotten my drugs. Well, I don't know whether that's a healthy response or not.
At least he's honest in that case, I suppose.
Yes, I suppose so. I suppose it's a plant. I'd never have forgotten mine. I guess speak to any addict and they'll tell you exactly the same thing. I mean, back when you were smoking cigarettes, Andy, would you have gone out without your cigarettes in your pocket? Of course you wouldn't.
So, that's a very good point. And also a backup pack as well, because, you know, if you get caught in a nightclub and you have to go to a machine where you pay more than you would in the shop for 16 instead of 20... You know, you don't want that to happen either. But one thing you said there made me think of what you said about drugs. Do you remember that thing about Bill Hicks? Drugs are pretty important to a drug addict. Do you remember
Yeah. Well, they are. They are, you know. I have to say I believe Hunter on that one. Anyway, one thing is a really good search, folks, because obviously I'm on with Shelley. We're not at the moment, we're taking a hiatus because, you know, Shelley needed a break and stuff, and I covered for her break last year solo, so I've decided to take a break at the same time, which is great because it's freed up some time to do a Limey show with Andy, which I'm assuming we're going to be doing a few of these sporadically, Andy, over the foreseeable future. It would be good to catch up and do this again. Another one here. So this is a really good search, folks. So if you put in, this is for UK folks anyway, or anyone overseas, if you're interested in what the government are up to over here, if you put in .gov simply into a Google search engine or the search engine of your choice, press enter and then click on news, you will get the most recent feeds coming out of the .gov website. They don't always show up unless you put in news. And it brings up all the most recent ones. So this one sprung out at me this morning or yesterday evening. Universities face ban on international students over visa abuse. Right. So this is a means of immigration I never, or illegal immigration or semi-legal immigration that I never even thought of, Andy. Raised standards for recruiting foreign students come amid continued visa abuse. Student asylum claims already down by 30%, claims the government. Well, people were coming over to be students. They'd be let in because they were a student, and then they just wouldn't bother completing the course. But they've already got asylum. Clever, huh? I never even thought about that. So the other thing I'm going to bring up, and then I'll end the great distraction, and that is, here you go. So we have, this is also from .gov, adjuvanted trivalent influenza vaccine authorized for adults age 50 and over. The adjuvanted trivalent influenza vaccine works by stimulating the immune system to produce its own protection against the flu. Sounds a bit like mRNA, doesn't it, Andy? This is just another one of these things being put out there. I think the best way of probably not catching the flu or anything like that is just trying to eat healthy and do a bit of exercise, folks. Yeah, that'll do it. It's your best chance. You know, go to nature, eat some oranges and stuff with vitamin C in. Yeah, there's a reason we're called the Limeys, you know. Moving on from X, I know we're short of time. I wanted to bring this also to the listeners and Andy's attention, if he wasn't already in the know. And that is, I mentioned David Irving earlier with his statement regarding British justice being the best that money can buy. His family are continuing his work, but not necessarily in the means of visiting the archives and doing what David did for all of his life. But what they've actually done is collated all his research, all his documents, even his radicals diary that he used to comment on his own website. And if you go to a website now called ask.winston.study, very simple, ask.winston.study, they have correlated all of David Irving's research into an AI search engine named Winston. And you can go onto that page, you get 10 free searches a day, which is more than enough if you're actually wanting to search a specific subject thoroughly for yourself and using this as a tool. 10 searches a day is absolutely plenty, very generous of them. And you can search basically David Irving's knowledge base, which is absolutely fantastic. So ask.winston.study. Go and have a look. Test it out. It's absolutely fantastic. Was really chuffed that they've done that.
Thank you, Maleficus. And don't put in the name of my book in there, because I asked him personally and he was informed me he'd never heard of it. There's nothing worse than name dropping. And when you name drop yourself and they haven't heard of you, it's even more embarrassing. Let me assure you of that. Before we go, I am happy to come back and do another show with Maleficus if he's free, but there's only been 3 people that have given donations to support this show for a considerable period of time, and I wouldn't consider doing any more with Maleficus unless there was more support out there. So the donation button is on the website, so I'll leave that up to you. And the other thing that came to mind, Maleficus, when you were just talking, I forget what you were saying, but let me just say, when you hear the name Enoch Powell, many people would think this is the most racist politician that this country ever produced. He did a speech called the Rivers of Blood speech. It was so racist. He was obviously a deeply racist individual. Well, he was a health secretary. Not a health secretary. He was a health minister. And he recruited nurses when he was a health minister. And if, like me, you want to type Enoch Powell recruited nurses into Google, excuse me, the AI overview comes up at the top with this. Between 1960 and 1963, Conservative Health Minister Enoch Powell actively launched a campaign to recruit nurses and doctors from the Caribbean and South Asia to fill severe manpower shortages in the rapidly expanding National Health Service. So I always find it interesting how, you know, people that are involved in promoting something are somehow, at some point in the future, made out to be the complete antithesis of what they were doing. Is that something you've seen regularly in society, Malificus?
Yes, yes, very regularly throughout history. It's all down to who's paying the bills, and it's all down to, just ask Winston Churchill who was paying the bills when he was in the wilderness years.
Yeah. It doesn't, you know, I've never even had a cleaner, never mind a staff of 20 that I was somehow able to pay all that time. How about you, Malificus?
No. I'm still self-employed, but I don't have any staff at all. It's just me. Just me.
Yeah, indeed. Anything else you'd like to say before we go?
Well, I'd just like to say it's been fantastic to be back for another Limey's. 201, Andy, 201. And, I hope that we can catch up again soon and have another chat. That's good. It's great stuff. Thanks for having me back on.
Well, thank you so much, Malificus. And I'll mute us both now and play the closing music, if I remember how to do all of this. So here we go. I think it's running. So I want to thank all of you for joining us.